Hello, gorgeous.
I would make a great queen because I am so stubborn.
Well, when I'm good, I'm very good. But when I'm bad, I'm better.
Never take a learning opportunity away from another student. No matter how smart you meet everyone to think you are.
I am dancing a bright beam of light.
Is your family. You have to protect them from those guys, okay?
Make the money. Don't let it make you.
You had me at hello.
And most importantly, you must always have faith in yourself.
This is I'm Here for the Food.
What's up, everybody? This is I'm Here for the Food, where we discuss topics that feed your mind, feed your spirit, and hopefully your soul. I'm Melissa.
I'm Blue.
I'm Chantel.
We're going to get them warmed up a little bit more, you know, as time goes on. Second episode, we're really excited about that. And we're really pumped because this is a topic that affects a lot of people. Not Girl. Just Black people, but just people in every culture, every race. Yes. And I'm talking about colorism. Whoop, whoop. So the most recent example if it is an example, I'm not even quite sure if it
we're
is,
gonna
but we're going to
unpack that.
But the most recent thing that happened to, you know, make this, you know, conversation just explode everywhere, is what just happened on Basketball Wives involving Evelyn and OG. Now, I have not watched the show in a great many years. I know Blue watches the show.
I binge watched it this weekend and I'm still recovering.
Okay. And Chantal, you watched at one point, you stopped watching.
Many years ago, I used to watch, do not watch now.
Right.
But watched part of the episode today.
Okay. Ooh. So we've been trying to catch up on everything that happened so that we could have, you know, a very clear cut perspective on what it was, what's really happening, because what the outcome of everything that has transpired seems to be is there is this massive boycott against Evelyn. People have called up the production company, called up VH1, recorded themselves calling, saying, we want Evelyn off the show. She's a colorist. We don't want her on the show. The backlash has been swift and intense, like visceral. You could feel this shit, you know? And so on Hollywood Unlocked, we just recently had Evelyn on as a guest. And here's the thing. Let me just say this right out. I have never met Evelyn before in my life up until that day, last week. I didn't really have an impression of her either way, other than I found her to be extremely combative. I found her to be somebody who solved her conflict with combat or the threat of combat. I have seen in past episodes her throw a bottle in somebody's direction that smashed on the wall, glassware, the whole nine, the threats. I've seen it all, which is what turns me off of watching reality TV, because I've been through it. It was horrific. You know, I have my own, you know, personal feelings about that. I don't want to watch things that stress me the fuck out. You know what I mean? And watching that kind of stuff stresses me out.
Yeah.
So I wasn't sure. I wasn't clear on who OG was. But then quickly found out just by doing homework and stuff like that. And Blue, what's the starting point here? You know what I mean? Like, so what is our starting point here? Like, how do we unpack? Let's start with when OG came on the show, because here was the problem, here was the trouble that I was having.
Right.
Although I'd never met Evelyn before, and although I'd, you know, found certain things that she'd done on the show distasteful, I wanted to give her the benefit of the doubt when she came up to the show, because I do know how people can adopt a very mob mentality when it comes to a narrative being established. And so that was what it seemed like was happening from the outset. So she came on the show. I asked her some hard-hitting questions because I really wanted to know.
Did she directly answer them, or did she deflect? This is a truth circle. Yeah.
I felt like she's been in the business for a long time, and she's had media training. And so, you know, from the answers seemed genuine. I will say that. The answers came across as genuine. I did not have backstory on anything at this point. I just wanted to ask questions for my own curiosity,
right.
Which was, how do you answer the question that, you know, can you really like claim foul when you have been part of a show that solves conflict through combat and you've been one of the main perpetrators? So how are you a victim now? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And is pussy padding a thing now? Like, that confused the shit out of me.
It is a thing. It is a thing. That's a
I'm not
going to
be doing that.
It is no, an it's awful actually, thing. That
we it's a popular thing. I think April did it on a video. Like, a lot of people are padding
it
the pussy.
It troubles me when she
so
did it, too.
Vulgar. It is so vulgar. We are not men.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't even like it if a man was, like, padding
his
right, exactly.
Yeah, I don't want anybody outside of, like, maybe, like, animals to pat their So I'll be right. honest. Male or female, if it's not a zoo, I don't want to see it.
Right.
So let's start at the beginning, right? Because not everybody watches the show.
Yeah, and I also want to preface this with, you know, the purpose of this show is really just to use the whole Evelyn OG Basketball Wives thing
as a
springboard, launch a launch pad towards the bigger discussion of colorism. And one of the things that I thought to myself when I was picking my co-hosts is I need an enormous group of women to feel completely represented.
Right.
And oftentimes we identify through skin complexion,
optics.
You know, women of color. Yeah. Exactly. And so I wanted a beautiful chocolate woman. I wanted some caramel complexion. And just watch in December, I will be as white as this table. It just, I'm half white, half black. That's my melanin just goes when daylight savings time happens.
Right.
You know, I got a tan right now, which I love. But I'd say all that to say that I wanted to feel like every woman or most every woman who was could see themselves and would feel represented by this group. So going back to the point I was making was this is not about Evelyn and OG. It's just about the conversation that arose because of what happened between the two of them. So you watch Basketball Wives.
Yeah.
Bullet point it for everybody.
Well, real quick though, I'm actually happy you brought up the thing about representation because I was mentioning before we got on that people are going to look at us and make assumptions about where all three of us stand based on how we look.
Right.
I might upset some people. So I feel like I need to state it up front.
Mm-hmm.
I've been called a unicorn.
Mm-hmm.
I am a woman in her 30s who's never been made fun of for being my complexion.
Wow.
Ever.
Wow.
That's no awesome. One has ever talked to me
crazy. Nobody's ever said to
my face.
But wait, let
never
me ask
to
you,
my face.
You've never had a guy say to you, you're pretty for a black girl, for
never.
A dark-skinned girl?
Never.
That's amazing.
So this is something I want to explain about self-fulfilling prophecies, right? Because it's weird being the unicorn because you look like the group, but you're like, oh, man, I don't have the same trauma stories. I'm going to have to fake this, right? Like, I'm going to get fake tears. So what happened is my mom in my house is like the prettiest person in our family.
Mm-hmm.
And she was two shades darker than me.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up thinking the prettiest person in my family was even darker than I was.
Okay.
Right?
Uh-huh.
And then we lived in a family where I'm Haitian and Cuban.
Mm-hmm.
The whole Haitian side is super, super chocolatey,
mm-hmm.
hairless, like beautiful, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And all of our in-laws look like Drake or the DeBarges.
Hilarious.
So I grew up thinking, when you're pretty and chocolate, everybody likes gonna want you.
Yeah.
So I walked through the world like that. And when I was in high school and the boy that everybody liked was like, looked like Albie Shore and he liked me, I was like, of course he does, because I'm cute and chocolate.
I will.
It took me a while to realize that chocolate was not supposed to be an asset. I always thought it was because like we were popping in my family.
That is so beautiful.
I will say that I think light-skinned people, we do gravitate towards dark skin.
My best friend, light-skinned people love me. So I never was like, I always thought that made me pop. Like, I was so lost. I was 17 years old, and there was this boy that I liked. And he was chocolate, too. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I'm about to shift it. I'm about to find me a chocolate boy. He's going to have his mind blown that I actually want him back, right?
Yeah.
He liked chubby girls. He liked chubby, cute girls.
Right.
I was like, check, we are in there. And so every day I would hit on him and he would never like try to holler at me.
Right.
So finally I asked my friend, I was like, look, I look like all his exes. Why doesn't he want to talk to me? She was like, oh no, he only likes light-skinned chubby girls.
Oh.
And I was like, that's weird. Like that was literally the first time I ever knew what colorism was.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's as deep as it goes for me.
But wait, now hold on.
So I'm being serious.
So let me ask you that. Is that really colorism or is that just a preference? How do you separate the two? Because it's a really, really, really blurry line.
The colorism didn't come from him. It came from her because she was mad as a chocolate woman that I was so naive about colorism. So she sat me down and was like, you know how they are with us, and da-da-da-da. And she started listing all these really painful things that happened to her.
Okay, so she was...
That had never happened to me.
So she's projecting her trauma onto you, right, and making her experiences belong to you.
And then she said, I always thought you were colorist because you keep on dating these light-skinned boys. I was like, girl, that's all I can get.
Right.
And so it became a conversation where at 17 years old, I found out that all society was going through this colorist thing, mm-hmm, that me and my Forrest Gump bubble, mm-hmm, and my little like pro-black family, mm-hmm, had never exposed me to. Mm-hmm. And I suddenly became almost like an anthropologist of colorism, where I looked like the aggrieved group,
yeah,
without actually having the pain body.
But here's the crazy part is you're Afro-Latina.
Yeah.
You know, Cubans, Dominicans, mm-hmm, Puerto Ricans notoriously discriminate
notoriously
against their darker... They refer to themselves as, I'm a white Dominican.
Yeah.
I'm a white Puerto Rican. I'm a white Cuban.
We always clown them as like, whoa, being unwell. Like in my family, we always pitied them.
Right.
Like, oh, they don't get it.
Right.
So I grew up in a family where if you were colorist, we thought you had like a learning disability. Like,
right,
we didn't treat it like a thing that was cute.
Mm-hmm.
So I was always taught to like feel bad for people who thought like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got older and hit puberty and realized that everybody else was actually not feeling bad for them and subscribing to it.
Right.
And so it became a thing where I started like speaking out on behalf of chocolate girls.
Yeah.
But people who were talking bad about them were like, but you don't count because you cool. Like, it was almost like I was getting like a token pass in the colorism wars. So it gave me a very interesting perspective that's not going to be steeped in all my life. I had to, like, it's not going to be pain body like that.
Yeah.
But I know what the microaggressions are because I've watched my girlfriends go through
it. So hold that thought.
Wow.
Yeah.
Chantal, I want to find out about your experiences, yeah, with anything, like racism, colorism,
yeah,
you were in the WNBA. Like, I'm sure, yeah, that there might be experiences there.
For sure.
You know.
For sure. So I'm brown skinned. I grew up on the West Coast, mm-hmm, in Vancouver, Washington. So, mm-hmm, there was not a lot of black people there.
Yeah.
I also grew up with my younger sister is very light skinned. Like, mm-hmm, she's lighter than you. Very, very light skinned.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so growing up, I did experience that where she was the pretty one and I was the smart one,
mm-hmm,
given, period. Mm-hmm. Right. Then I started,
but
playing
did people
sports.
Say that out? Did people say that out loud? Like, oh my God, she's so pretty. And so like, did they make references to her being light and that being a source of the attractiveness?
Right.
It wasn't that blatant. It was more like it was just understood.
Mm-hmm.
It was just understood by me.
Mm-hmm.
She did not realize it, but I got it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was almost like she was light enough to be attractive to the white guys, mm-hmm, and the black guys.
Right.
And for me, I wasn't really attractive to anyone because I was on the West Coast up in Vancouver. I was super dark skinned.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, wow. Mm-hmm. Then I remember moving to the South. I went to college in Tennessee,
mm-hmm,
and all of a sudden I'm relatively lighter skinned,
mm-hmm,
and all of a sudden I'm in style. And I was, mm-hmm, like, whoa, wait, how did this happen?
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually getting a little bit more attention than, yeah, I'm used to.
Yeah.
I remember talking to this one guy and he said, oh yeah, well, I don't date dark skinned girls.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, have you seen me? Because in my mind, I'm still like, listen, right, I'm brown. Mm-hmm. I'm brown skinned. And he's like, you're light enough.
Ah.
And so I have had very blatant, so that was in college. I went overseas and I remember thinking the fact that, like, I've been all over. I went to Africa and I remember thinking of the fact, wow, I'm getting on this plane one shade,
uh-huh,
and I'm going to go to Africa. I'm going to be darker when I come back. And because of that, I'm going to be less pretty when I land to many people. Like, uh-huh, I've always been very conscious of the perception of other people,
uh-huh,
based on the different skin colors. I don't know if that's because I grew up with a lighter skinned sister. My stepmom is white. I have light skinned people in my family.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. That's.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, okay. So that's very interesting because we both grew up in families where half the family is super light. But in my case, we were being fetishized as the chocolate ones and you guys were having a caste system of.
Yeah.
The light of the. Wow.
And it wasn't my family. Like, my family didn't say those things.
Right.
They were not. But it was just the world around me. I understood it very quickly.
Right.
Based on just how people were treated. I didn't see a lot of representation. And I was just very clear that my sister was always the pretty one.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. That's fascinating.
And of course, that's in quotes. But
no, I mean, I one of my best friends, her name is Tamara. She was my makeup artist for a really long time. She lives in New York. She has a sister named Genya. And these two are like my sisters from another set of parents. Mm-hmm. Genya is a couple of shades lighter than Tamara. And Tamara was, you know, has always had, you know, kind of like a complex that was developed through, you know, trauma and abuse, being referred to as D, being referred, sorry, the nickname, her sister's nickname is D. That's what I call her. D being referred to as the pretty one, mm-hmm. And her internalizing all of this stuff.
Wait a minute, I'm thinking about something real quick. I'm having, like, my brain is working, right? Mm-hmm. There's a theme that's popping up where it seems a lot where it's colorism, but also gender. Because there was a part that we watched in Basketball Wives where OG is talking to Evelyn and she's mentioning he wants a black woman and that's what's bothering you, right?
So, yeah, well, so we have to, let's rewind a little bit.
I was about to say though, the gender though, mm-hmm. I do think that the colorism conversation is very different for dark skinned black men than it is for dark skinned black women.
Absolutely.
I think so.
Had you had a brother and he was super chocolatey and you were the lighter one, he would have been called your fine ass brother.
Because here's the thing,
right? He would have been called fine.
This is true. And I have always said, like, as far as men, it's like, listen, either white or darker than me. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I don't know if that's a preference mm-hmm. or colorism.
That whole preference colorism conversation is just such a gray area. But, you know, just so we can unpack how the conversation came about and if that's what we really actually are talking
about.
Bullet
points, okay.
You know, the bullet points. So OG had only been on the show. This is her second season.
Second season of the show, and mm-hmm. she's a female football player. Mm-hmm. And so because she was a female football player, when they initially started calling her aggressive, I thought it was because of football.
Right.
Because football is a very aggressive sport.
Yeah.
She's also a maverick. She doesn't do groupthink.
Yeah.
That's probably a reason why she shouldn't be on the show, because the show seems to rely very heavily on groupthink.
I really wish that everybody would understand when it comes to reality TV, you have no idea what this casting process is like. And it seems like not calling OG this, I'm just saying in general, it seems like they literally are looking for people that are going to stir the pot and create. Basketball Wives producers are loving this.
Oh, they love it. 100%.
Like, they're loving the engagement. They don't give a shit about Evelyn. They don't give a shit about OG. They don't give a shit about anybody. They are loving the fact that everybody is so engaged in this, and it's such a visceral fucking reaction that people are having that they're like, oh, yes. If you don't think that they, you know, there's only so much editing that can be happen where you don't get, you know, you don't see the forest for the trees. You know what I'm saying?
Like, the editing is very skewed, though.
The editing
Let's be honest. It is it's Shawnee's show.
Yeah.
And Shawnee makes it a point that when you watch the show, whatever her narrative is, that's where the editing goes, right?
Mm-hmm. For sure.
This year, they showed their asses so much that even with a biased editing, they could not hide what happened.
Right.
Because what happened was they were banking on OG starting trouble.
Yeah.
They were not banking on OG having integrity and mm-hmm. also being a law student who has receipts.
Right.
That's where things got a little bit off the cuff for them. So they thought they were going to have this angry football playing brown skin woman come in and rah, rah, rah. And they were going to call her ugly and monkey and crack jokes. And she was going to cry or get into a fight and perpetuate that myth. And that was going to keep going. Mm-hmm. What they didn't expect is OG ended up being probably the only person this whole season who didn't lay hands on anybody.
Right.
Instead, she intellectually, like, clobbered them. And so, like, it was a lot of times where we were seeing Evelyn flying over tables and throwing chairs.
Yeah.
And OG was like, I want to kill you right now, but I'm not.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so they weren't banking on that. So even with the editing, what ended up happening is whenever the group mentality would pick somebody to pick on, OG would be like, I'm going to bully the bullies. And she mm-hmm. would go defend that person.
Right.
And then it would be her and that person against the group.
Right.
And the person that was kept on switching, whether it was Tammy or Cece. And so it became this narrative of the whole season, the audience is watching Evelyn throw stuff. They watch Melissa throw a table. Mm-hmm. They watch Jackie throw a chair. Literally, mm-hmm. furniture is moving.
Yeah.
And yet the only person that Shawnee O'Neal calls aggressive the whole season
is OG.
The brown skin girl who hasn't touched anybody.
Gotcha. Hold on.
And I was going to say, as far as her inserting herself, that became the group narrative now because she is defending the person that they're picking on.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. They're all of a sudden, oh, instead of trying to be bully the bully, no, now you're trying to insert yourself into every single conversation. No, I'm trying to keep you from beating up on this one person as a group.
Yeah.
And so they used it against her, but that's another example of the groupthink mob mentality that's on the show.
Right.
But there's also archetypes though, right? Like, let's be honest. Evelyn is supposed to be the spicy Puerto Rican.
Right.
And as a spicy Puerto Rican, you know, you can throw stuff and do whatever, but you're the spicy Puerto Rican and you're still considered a sex object. And it's even right. considered and a little it's erotic, right? Like, ooh, look at you with all your feistiness. I like this about you. Mm-hmm. But let a black woman raise her voice, though.
Oh, yep.
Gee, here you come being aggressive. In what world is throwing a table or a chair less aggressive than saying, hey, I want to hit you, but I'm not?
Or just getting in between the two people that are about to fight, and or one person trying to attack and defending your friend. That is, I mean, I watched it and it's really hard to disagree with everything that you're saying.
It's glaring.
I mean, you know, so I guess OG used Evelyn's remark towards Cece, calling her Lily, was, you know, another example to support that Evelyn is just, you know, has racist tendencies or prejudicial tendencies. And she also talked about the fact that Evelyn drops the N-word a lot.
Yeah.
Which we talked about on the show. And she, you know, she was like, I was born in Brooklyn. I was raised in the Bronx. And I will say, from having lived in New York, dated a Puerto Rican for years, in the Bronx, he looks like a light-skinned black man. Puerto Ricans in New York, they are very kind of like melting pot thrown into the whole black experience. It just is a fact.
It's a fact.
It is not a defense. It's just a fact. You can't change it. You know, so you got Puerto Ricans that are entrenched in a group of black people. And when cops come, they don't make any kind of differentiation. It is black and brown. You're all getting arrested. You're all getting fucking records. That's just basically. And this is a euphemism. You know, Parkchester, like Puerto Rican and black. They, Dominican, all of them, and it's N-word, N-word, N-word as a euphemism, as a colloquialism, as a term of endearment, brother, whatever. You got to take the use of the word to task before you could apply it to this situation.
But you said she's had media training, so that's her starting point. She no longer lives in the South Bronx.
Right.
She's been on television for a decade. So at what part do you evolve?
Fair
point. Am I going to blame the milk that I dropped on the floor when I was 5 years old as to why I no longer pick
no,
up
that's
milk?
That's definitely a
Evelyn's
fair point.
Evelyn's a very
she
mature
have a
woman.
Reason, she doesn't have a reason to evolve because she's being paid to be that character, though.
Girl, the say it again.
They're paying her to be that character, and so she's going to continue to be that character until somebody stands up and is like, no, that's not
you
okay.
You mean OG? Until so OG stands up and is like, no.
Right.
One thing that I want to like take everybody to task for is you make these monsters. You make them. Make them these monsters by tuning in and you know, saying it's your guilty pleasure. But the fact of the matter is that in this day and age, people's bad behavior is rewarded. So you cannot get mad at at the monsters you've created. You just can't.
See?
When you feel like Tekashi 6ix9ine is such a great example of that.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
I do. I think I agree with that in general, but on Basketball Wives in particular, didn't Shawnee have a whole episode? My best friend watches the show. Mm-hmm. He told me Shawnee had a whole episode, like second season, where she like filmed in the church and said, Pastor, I feel bad that I have this show. People are throwing tables. I'm going to change my ways. And went on a whole press tour.
And then she
telling us that she wasn't going to do this
anymore.
And then
she saw how much money she made from the show.
So yeah.
Right. You only feel bad if you change.
So Shawnee, what happened to the pastor? Have you guys don't talk no more? You lost his number?
No.
She could come to the show and we could have this conversation eye white to eye white. Because I have questions.
Absolutely. But at the
is that confrontational?
No.
I really mean that. I don't want to piss off Shaquille O'Neal's wife.
Listen.
But Shawnee, like, I feel like you owe me an apology because those 18 hours that I spent binge watching your show, I'm now going to have to book an extra appointment with my therapist to like cleanse that off my body.
I'm just saying that at the end of the day, everybody has a certain degree of culpability in this situation.
True.
You know,
yeah.
You guys watch it. You guys like it's your guilty pleasure. You binge watch it. You watch season after season. You are actively involved and participate in these people's lives.
Right.
You know, and so it's just interesting that Evelyn being a source of entertainment for what, 12 seasons minus the couple of seasons when she made the transition from Miami to LA, that suddenly now it's like, get her off the show. I'm all indignant. I'm all up in arms and whatnot. It's kind of like,
you've been celebrating her.
No, you've been celebrating her forever.
No, you guys, she was on OWN. She went on a whole thing where she went on OWN and had a softer side of Sears, like for three seasons a moment, mm-hmm. where she was like hugging koalas and like reading Ayana Vinzant books.
But
you can't pivot on us like
but,
that.
But wait. Mm-hmm.
She I believed her.
No, wait, hold on. She doesn't have those cast members to be on the show. That is a controlled environment for her. That is her family. That is her friends. She co-signs who's brought on that show because that's her world. When she comes on Basketball Wives, it's not just the Evelyn show. It's Shawnee. It's Tammy. Yeah. It's Jackie. It's everybody. And it comes with all the, you know, the baggage that these women have, you know. So at the end of the day, the colorism thing is still on the table. And a lot of the comments, I feel like, came from the perception that she's a colorist came from the fact that she repeatedly called OG ugly.
Repeatedly
yes. called her ugly.
And there's been some debate about how pretty Evelyn is, like her and OG, like why do we think Evelyn's pretty and OG's not?
Right.
Because
right.
OG is a Nigerian woman with right. traditional like African features.
Yeah.
And so is that why we think she's ugly? Because she looks like her actual people?
Yeah. Well, that is.
Because I'm gonna be honest, mm-hmm. objectively speaking, no tea, no shade. I'm a face queen, right? Mm-hmm. Like I like faces. Like mm-hmm. I don't do butterheads. If right. you have a six pack, but you growl from the neck up, I'm gonna notice that, right? And so as a face queen, I did an analysis on OG and Evelyn. They're pretty on par to me.
Right.
Objectively speaking, taking away right. all racist things, right? Right. And so I have a question, right? Is it possible that these two extremes are wrong? Because there's one extreme that's saying Evelyn and Shawnee are malicious colorists. And mm-hmm. then the people who are saying everybody's booty hurt, y'all got Twitter fingers, they making bank, y'all are haters. I'm somewhere in the middle where I'm like, is it possible? I don't think Evelyn and Shawnee are intentional colorists. I think they have a blind spot of internal bias that they haven't confronted because they're too busy defending themselves. I don't think they're doing it on purpose, but I think they are doing it though.
Yeah. No, 100%. I think
you know what I'm saying? Like you can do something and be like, oh no, I'm not mm-hmm. doing that, and then they play back the tape like, oh, I 100% did that.
But at the end day, I think you're absolutely right. At the end of the day, everybody leans towards a certain bias because of the effects of like the long lasting effects of colonization and brainwashing.
We're about to get deep, y'all.
It's true. Like I feel like the topic has not really been unpacked in the way that it really can't be in a comment section, you know? So that's why I wanted to devote today's show to that right. because there's just so many facets. Like I went back and I decided to watch those two documentaries, Dark Girls and Light Girls, that were produced by Bill Duke. And a lot of people feel like both documentaries were very surface.
Shallow.
They brought up good points. They had a lot of good talking heads on there. People who have like, you know, backgrounds in history and psychology and that sort of thing. They use people who, you know, actresses or, pundits, correspondents, people from all walks of life gave their perspective on, you know, what experiences they've had. What I see happening is everybody comes from a place, like has their own traumatic experiences.
Did you learn anything from those documentaries? I'm trying to not be petty.
No.
Okay.
No.
Isn't the whole purpose of a documentary to teach us something?
I didn't learn anything.
I learned nothing from watching those documentaries.
I didn't learn anything new. What it did was it just reinforced what I already knew, which was a lot of my dark-skinned girlfriends have experiences that I can listen to and intellectualize, but right. obviously I have not had those same experiences. Just like they don't have the experiences that I've had being light-skinned and terrorized in school.
And treated like a trophy,
yeah. bullied, hair cut off, fights intentionally started with me where girls had like switchblades trying to slice my skin. Like that's traumatic as fuck. What I see is happening, especially in the comment section, is people are weighing their trauma against another's and well, mine was worse than yours. And it's just like trauma is trauma. You know, we cannot keep projecting onto each other that what happened to me is worse than what happened to you. because we're never going to get anywhere. The conversation is never going to move past. And I think that that's why it was so shallow and so surface, because the conversation can't get past whose trauma is worse.
That's called the Oppression Olympics. As an athlete, you might have heard of that. It's called the Oppression Olympics. I raised you a drunk father and an abusive uncle. It's the only Olympics where when you win, you actually lose.
Yeah.
Why do you want to win this, right? I have a question, though. Mm. This might be a little provocative. Mm-hmm. This is about Jason, actually. Okay. Shout out to Jason Lee, who's an extended member of our family through Melissa.
Yes.
He's like our play cousin. One day me and Chantel will get to meet him at a family reunion or something.
Yeah, no, this is a good time to bring up Jason because...
Yeah, I have a question about Jason
posted a video where he didn't necessarily defend Evelyn, but what he wanted to talk about was stopping cancel culture and how easy it is to lay the colorism label on somebody when maybe it's just their preference or that's not what the conversation's about. I will say that both Jason and I are not like avid watchers of Basketball Wives, so it did take watching it to see. Ooh,
yeah, I agreed with Jason. So if Jason's watching, so anybody who agreed with Jason. Because what Jason is saying in broad strokes is 100% correct.
Yes.
Cancel culture is people who are using their pain as an excuse to extinguish other people, metaphorically speaking, right? Mm-hmm. It's a nasty thing. I'm not a fan of it. Mm-hmm. If I cancel you, by the time I cancel someone, they've earned it like a couple times, right? However, when you are watching the specifics of the show, suddenly his great point does not in any way apply to the show that we saw.
Right.
But there's one thing he said that bothered me, even when I thought I agreed with him, that I want you guys to be honest with me about.
Go.
Yeah.
Okay, so he said, but Evelyn has, and Evelyn said the same thing. Evelyn has like black boyfriends and black children. Mm-hmm. So like, and you're calling her colorist? So let's pause for a quick second and have a little teaching moment about how colorism works. Part of how colorism works is lighter women are considered the top of the food chain because of their proximity to whiteness, because white women are the top of the food chain. Mm-hmm. And dark men are considered the top of the food chain because mandingos hypersexualize black men as these monsters, these King Kongs with big penises.
Yeah.
Which means when you see a black man only dating light-skinned women and therefore having caramel babies with her, that doesn't take away from being colorist. That's actually a facet of it.
Right.
So we need to stop telling women that they can't be colorist because they have brown-skinned like husbands, because literally that's how you got him, boo. Like, a lot of times his preferences are why you got him. So you can't use evidence, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's a backwards logic. So stop telling women with black children and black boyfriends and light friends that they can't be colorist because they're actually benefiting. So my question to you guys is, you actually mentioned it. Do you guys have ever had moments where you've been honest with yourself that you were benefiting from a man being colorist? And I want you both to be very honest. Like, a guy who you knew that if he broke up with you, he would never date a girl darker than you.
Absolutely. And I have, so I'm like right in the middle.
You're peanut butter.
Because
I call y'all the peanut butter people. The pecans.
Right. I'm right in the middle. I'm not super light skinned, not super dark. And I mentioned it earlier where a man literally told me I was light enough to be pretty, light enough for him to talk to. And I did realize it right away. And we never spoke again because I did not want, I was like, any man that is that narrow-minded, any man that is going to talk about someone, a group of women who look like his mother, who look like so many other black women, like I just couldn't get down with that. Now, I think that even though he was fine,
but you're so
narrow-minded, like I don't care what you look like if you can't be an intellectual equal. And so if you're proving that mindset, then no, I can't. I can't do it. Yeah. And so, I did choose not to let that work to my advantage. However, I think that I would be, not that I'm any better than anybody else, but I think that isn't the norm where somebody realizes, I date light skins and a light skin woman is going to be like, I can't get down with that because I don't like that limited mindset. I'm sure that doesn't happen a lot.
You're the only person who's ever told me that they knew that. And walked away. All my light skin friends would be like, oh yeah, he only dates light skin girls. And they don't clock it, see it as a thing. They're like, well, he picked me, so I'm popping.
Well, it's, again, you're at the top of the food chain.
Right.
So the only way that you don't benefit, it's privilege. Mm-hmm. The only way you don't benefit from being at the top of the food chain is to denounce your privilege and choose not to walk in it. But that's hard when you're trying to get ahead too, right?
Chantel's gonna get some comments in the comment section.
I'm just saying, and I'm not saying that anybody is a bad person. Again, I'm right in the middle. I have spent my whole life as an athlete. athlete. There was one time I got pulled over. I actually spoke about this in a Google talk I did one time. I was example of privilege. And I got pulled over going speeding across Alabama. Mm. White cop pulls me over. And of course, I'm scared. I'm in the South. I'm like, oh my gosh, like this is not gonna be good. I don't want this ticket right now. And so we're having a conversation. He's like, where are you going? I said, oh, I'm actually driving from Texas to Tennessee because I'm getting inducted into the Sports Hall of Fame this weekend. And he was like, oh, you play basketball? Immediately, I was like, yes, I am not getting a ticket.
Right.
Period.
Boobs has always been my way out of a ticket.
Yes, yeah. Boobs. Oh, sorry.
Is that privilege? Boobs.
Yeah, that's privilege.
That's absolutely privilege. Did I tell him, sir, can you please give me this ticket? Because I know the only reason you're not giving me this ticket is because I'm an athlete.
Right.
No, I didn't. I continued on about my day without that ticket.
Right.
However, his partner then pulls up a little bit later, and I'm like, freaking out. I'm like, oh my gosh, did I say something wrong? Did I do something wrong? Why do I need two cops on this traffic stop? Did he call him? Mm-hmm. I put my hands back on the steering wheel. We were joking, having a great time, but I tense up, I freak out. And then he notices it. Mm-hmm. He notices it and he's like, he automatically gets it. He's like, oh shoot, she's scared because he just pulled up. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, that's my partner. I called him earlier. He's delivering business cards to me.
Right.
He explains it right away. Why? Because he saw the other side of privilege.
Yeah, this is, oh, okay.
Right away.
Yeah, this is about to turn into like a, you know, right. Black people, cops kind of
police
brutality.
Not at all. But the point is there's two sides of privilege.
Right.
And I'm right in the middle on a whole lot of topics, but on this, I could never date a man that's like, no, I'm dating you because you're light enough.
I haven't, nah.
Melissa.
I have never had a guy say to me that he's dating me because I'm light skinned. Usually it's because it's the Melissa Ford thing. You know, so that's a whole
come through, Flex.
No,
she's like, it's because I'm famous.
It
and
is
I'm popping.
No, fuck that.
Okay, Melissa
no,
got other problems.
No,
okay.
No, okay. No, no, it's fucking horrible.
I feel so bad for you, you popular famous model.
No,
so
because
hard.
No, that whole trophy thing, they don't get. Listen.
Hold on a second.
You're so pretty.
No,
okay,
no, no.
We're listening. We're listening.
No. Because listen, my car accident that happened. Okay, because I'm Melissa Ford, because I'm the trophy.
Right.
When I was a broken little doll, my dude never showed up.
Oh, okay. That hurt my heart.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the
okay,
other.
Okay, I got ugly real fast. Okay, Melissa, you win.
That's
okay.
The other side of it. So when they do fetishize you and you know put you up as a trophy. You cannot be anything but one-dimensional. You
That's
cannot
true.
Be anything than what they perceive you to be.
That's
sexy,
true, yeah.
Beautiful, cute, approachable.
I mean, I like that box,
all that
but
stuff,
okay.
But I can't have a bad day. I can't be emotional. I can't get sick. I cannot be what they don't think I am because then I'm no longer the fantasy. I don't want to fucking be a fantasy to somebody that I care about and I'm trying to establish a relationship with. So I digress. So with men, it has not been like a, oh, I like you because you're a light skin thing. It's been more of a Melissa Ford thing. I'll say that I've benefited by way of it through this industry.
Of course.
You know?
Yeah.
And you
I mean,
became Melissa Ford partly because
starting from music videos. Yeah. There was a mandate about light-skinned women, you know, the lighter the better, that sort of thing. It was not something that was written on paper. It wasn't said out loud. It just, you looked around and it was like, okay, you know, you'd have the token chocolate girl. A lot of times
probably would have been me. I'm always the token. Like, what is that about?
A lot of times it was one of my best friends, Natasha Maloney. I'm going to throw a picture up right here.
She's probably gorgeous, of the two of us.
Oh my gosh. It's disgusting how beautiful she is. Like, it's revolting. I love her and hate her at the same time. But she is just beautiful. But she was the token chocolate girl because she was just so exquisitely beautiful and so chocolate. Her you just want to lick her. Her skin is so beautiful. Anyways, I digress. She's married with children. I sound like I'm having a moment
Melissa,
about my friend.
Melissa coming out.
But I will say that obviously it's obvious that I have benefited by being lighter complected or half white or whatever the case is by way of my career. And I took full advantage of it. It wasn't my mindset though. I didn't think about the benefit. I just thought, like, holy shit, I actually made a career out of this thing. You know, who would have thunk it, you know?
And you're several years in and you're still doing it.
But my fight was getting people to understand that I had a brain to go along with the intelligence. The face. That was what my fight was. So I was very rarely thinking about, you know, the color spectrum and how people were affected or if I was affected, because it wasn't my mindset. Like, you got to understand, I'm half black, half white, raised in Toronto, one of the most liberal cities in the entire world. And I was raised in an all Italian neighborhood. Okay. So I didn't even know that I was quote unquote different, having one black parent and one white parent, till I was 7. I had no idea. My friends on my block treated me the same, like, whatever, you know, like, oh, it's Melissa, come over, play, blah, blah, blah. I learned how to speak Italian to talk to my friends' parents who were from the old country. I didn't have a gauge, you know, to say, oh, I'm being regarded with suspicion. I'm a kid. I don't have that yet. And it wasn't until, this was a pivotal moment, cousins of one of my neighborhood friends from Washington State came over, and one of them was just like, you're a nigger.
Oh.
Oh.
And
okay.
I didn't even know what that was. But the way he said it made me realize that word was a bad word.
Right.
And I was just like, no, I'm not. Not knowing what it means.
You're still not.
Yeah. I know, but I'm
for
like,
the record,
no, I'm not. He was like, well, you're black. And I was just like, not all the way. Like, I'm just confused because I'd never had a moment in my life, I'm 6 or 7 at this time, but where I'd had to turn around and look at my surroundings and be like, oh, I do have one white parent and one black parent and nobody else does. I just didn't understand. And so I was so embarrassed, humiliated, shamed, and I didn't know why, but I just ran home crying. And my dad was like, what is the problem? What is the problem? And my dad was like, you know, a Caribbean, you know, he was a football player. He looked like a football player, big, stocky, thick neck, chocolate. Oh, I miss that man. But anyways, he was scary as shit. And he was like, what is the problem? What's happening? And I was so embarrassed to tell the story because I still don't understand my embarrassment as a child. Mm-hmm. And I told my father what the boy had said to me. And he grabbed me by my arms and he looked me in my eyes. And he was like, the next time anybody says anything to you in respect to that, you tell them you have the best of both worlds. Do you understand me? Wow. And I was just like, okay. And from that moment on, it was just such a pivotal moment in my childhood. It seared into my mind, my mentality, my identity, that I'm winning by having one white parent and one black parent, because what that's doing for me is it's giving me a completely different lens to view the world with, you know, to where I don't see color. I can't see color. And when I came to the States and people were like, well, what are you? And well, you look black, so that's all you are. And I'm just like, I can't say that, because that's like completely ignoring the fact that I am half white, that this white woman gave birth to me, that my grandfather is this big Russian bear of a man, that my grandmother was from Oslo. That's a whole other issue that mixed kids go through, is like, is like, you're not black enough to be black and you're definitely not white enough to be white. So we've kind of we're in limbo constantly. I'm glad I just didn't have those experiences and my experiences with being shamed for being anything, you know, color.
I love that you're bringing up the fact that you have white family, because I think a lot of times when we say light skin, what we actually subconsciously mean is proximity to whiteness.
Yeah.
We want something to be as close to white as possible.
But, yeah.
And that's what we deem beautiful.
But here's the thing is, for me,
that's
for,
why I think.
But no, I know. But for, and I think that it's a lot of times it's this country, it's the US.
Yeah.
Because in Canada, it wasn't like, you know, here people seem to get mad at me. Like, I remember one time I posted a picture of me and my mother. It was a throwback Thursday. And I posted a picture of me and my mother when I was a baby. A fucking race war broke out on my page. You know, people were just like, are you sure you aren't adopted? I'm just like, okay, well, fuck you. Well, you don't look like you have a white mother. And it's just like, do you think that I posted this because I'm acting like I'm better than you by doing this?
There's pain in this country about
the projection of people's that. Trauma is yeah. a constant thing. So and that is what I would warn people against is when you're thinking about this, your perspective on something, just try to be very mindful of the place in which you're speaking from, because oftentimes we are speaking from our experiences, and those and painful experiences especially get a very my favorite word, visceral reaction out of people. And when it comes to
I love that word too. This is why we're friends.
I know, I love it too.
But here's the other side to that is I was at a party one time, mm-hmm. and my friend was throwing a party, and there was all these beautiful black women there, mm-hmm. Black men as well, right? Mm-hmm. And so I had invited one of my friends, and she's mixed as well. She's very light, you know, the big curly hair. Mm-hmm. And she walks in, and all of a sudden, all the black men in the room were like,
yeah,
like they just go to her. Like, she was it.
Right.
Very visibly.
Right.
Even though all of these beautiful black women had been standing there the entire time.
Right.
And she didn't notice it, but what she did notice is the black women's reaction to her. Because all of them was like, oh, for real? Like, but it's because of what had just happened. She didn't know that. And so, anyway, fast forward, we're getting ready to leave, and this black man that I know, he was talking to her and he's flirting with her and all that stuff. And I know he is a dog. I'm like, listen. And so I'm ready to go. I'm impatient. Mm-hmm. And I go to her and I go to him and I'm like, she's not sleeping with you. Can we go?
That's hilarious.
And
he was like, so much about you. You spicier than I thought. Okay.
And she's like, oh yeah, we can go. Like just mm-hmm. like that. And then right away I walk out. And as I'm walking out, I hear him say, that's why I don't date black women.
No, that's not why.
Right away.
That's not why, sir. You know what the funny thing is? We're talking about preference almost like, right? Like one of the things that's happening with this conversation we're having about colorism, I hope to God we do a second one about preference.
Yeah.
Because colorism hides the most under the word preference.
Right.
And it's crazy because
absolutely.
It doesn't matter how pretty your friend was though, right? She was probably going to get some smoke just because of the curly light thing, right?
Right.
I have a lot of white female friends because mm-hmm. white women feel like they can talk to me and I'll answer really greasy questions without attacking them.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah,
that
yeah.
friend. I'm the safe space.
Yeah. Nice.
You're going to get your feelings hurt, but I might give you some cake afterwards.
Yeah.
And she, okay, I'm being a face queen again. I'm about to do it. On a facial thing, she's about a 7 by society standards. Mm-hmm. I think she's beautiful because she's my friend.
Right.
Her boyfriend at the time, who was also white, was also a 7.
Yeah.
When they broke up, she started going after black men who were 10s.
Ooh.
And they responded.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we all know that a white 7 can pull a black 10.
Absolutely.
But a black 10, depending on how dark she is, probably can't pull a black 10 male. You know what I mean?
Right.
So there was something that even white women who are shaped like iPhones and aren't that pretty know that there's an NFL player somewhere that will smash
that will
her just because she's white.
You know what
and wife her. And wife her.
Meanwhile, Naomi Campbell could walk buck naked past them and be like, you're the only girl for me, Beulah.
You want to
know what I mean?
I,
like, what the hell? That's not preference. That's not preference.
But
like,
you know what I call that? You know what I call that? I call that reverse plantation mentality.
Yes, you a Mandingo right now, sir.
Like, when black men only go for white women, I'm just like, you're trying to do this reverse plantation, massive slave kind of thing on these women.
We need to talk about preference because preference is some BS.
Right. And a lot of times they're like, well, I like what I like. No, sir, you've been told to like that since before you could understand.
If you were actually shallow, Beulah would not be beating Naomi. Come on, let's be real.
So hold that thought. Let's bring it back to the OG Basketball Wives, Evelyn kind of thing, because when OG launched into a tirade, it seemed like it was a simmering pot. Like it was, and it just blew.
2 years in the making.
Yeah, that I will say.
Mm-hmm.
And she was probably fed up with being called ugly by Evelyn. There was also, I asked Evelyn about that text message, which we'll show here.
Oh, receipts come through, show.
Yeah, it's the text message where, or it was not a text message, it was a screenshot of, where is that here?
Chad's exchanges?
No. Nobody watches you harder than the people that can't stand you. And then it was a monkey picture. Okay. Evelyn said she was not talking about OG. She could not figure out how that got applied to her. And I'm just like,
stop.
I don't, who knows? We don't
know. I know. That's a lie.
For sure. Okay. 100%.
She claimed otherwise. She claimed that it was not her, that she wasn't speaking about OG specifically.
Because
that
black people pay her bills.
She was just talking about just
monkeys in general.
Because
she likes the animals.
Apparently, OG had used the same picture in another tweet, but way before, talking about something completely different. It is a commonly used picture, emoji, gif, whatever.
On the show, they go boop, boop, boop like monkeys.
Okay, so then that's where it is.
Come on.
That's where it's just not just
Evan,
bad
please
timing.
Come on the show and try again. And let's see what the answers are with people who actually watch the show.
Okay, so when the whole explosion happens, that's when OG comes out with the receipts that Chad had been in her DMs and ended up on text message with them while Chad and Evelyn were together. Lord, this shit is stressful. Mm-hmm. And so here we are, where there's petitions, where people want Evelyn off the show. OG used as an example the fact that she says the N-word, that she had cornrows in her hair. She may have valid points, but I don't think that those were it.
I think she's referring back to what I talked about, though. I think she knows that Evelyn has benefited heavily from the black man's going to go to the closest thing to a white woman. Like, there's this thing that the Kardashians do, right? Where they put on black aesthetics and do all the things that we're known for doing, mm-hmm. but know that the fact that they're doing it while not being black is why they're first choice.
Right. Yeah.
And I think what OG was trying to say is, you've been in this space where you're being treated like the Puerto Rican crown jewel mm-hmm. in a black space, mm-hmm. but joke's on you, the gag is your man actually wanted an actual black woman one day.
Yeah.
So I think that when you connect those dots.
No, isn't that who we got married to?
Yes. Yeah. I think when you connect the dots, what she's saying is, the thing that you've been pretending to be and you thought was putting you ahead of me actually being it is why he was in my DMs.
Right.
And I think that's why she brought up blackness, because she's like, Evelyn, you're on this. You know that, for example, since mm-hmm. Santana admitted that she thinks that black men give her preferential treatment for being an Afro-Latina, but not being an actual black woman, like not being a black presenting woman.
Keep that, no, wait.
And so I think Evelyn, like, I wish Evelyn had pulled it since Santana and said, you know what? I talked to my black friends and I am benefiting from this.
So wait, hold on one second.
I would have respected that more.
So hold on one second. She's also caught in a lot of slack right now because it seems like all of a sudden she's claiming the Afro-Latina label.
You like 45, but you just now decide to be Afro-Latina at 44 and a half.
So I asked her about that on the show.
Girl.
And she said that she had, been searching for her grandfather and she did Ancestry DNA. And that's when she discovered all of this stuff in her lineage and stuff like that. And she also said, prior, this is not defense, this is just facts, this is an interview that happened, I'm just putting it all on the table to discuss. Her response to that was that she also said, besides just the grandfather ancestry DNA, prior to all of this happening, she didn't feel like she needed to defend herself, so how she identified wasn't a part of the conversation till now. So now that it's relevant, now is when you all know she identifies as Afro-Latina. Again, I don't watch the show, so I have no clue.
The answer to that is no, because if you only mention being Afro-Latina when you have to defend yourself, then you don't actually consider yourself such. Mm. Right. If you only bring up something as a defense, that means you're not owning it as an everyday part of your life, which mm-hmm. means you're being fraudulent and the audience was smarter than you thought.
Right.
I think we're having an issue here where we are in a woke culture where the extremists are all nuts and think everybody's out to get them. Mm-hmm. The apologists think we're all nuts and nobody's out to get them. But those of us in the middle, the mm-hmm. audience is getting smarter.
Right.
And I think this show started mm-hmm. 8 seasons ago. Mm-hmm. What you could get away with in 2011 and 12, in 2019, they're going to call you out. And I think Evelyn hasn't aged well with the times when it comes to a smart audience that's onto her.
Right.
She never brought it up because we weren't onto her before. But now the audience is educated.
Wow.
And there's a petition, boo.
Yeah.
Educated people write petitions.
So do you think, so Blue, as somebody who watches the show.
Sorry.
Every once in a while.
I'm going to get so much hate mail.
No, I'm a nice person.
Show Corey, tell him I'm a nice person.
I have a mandate for our comment section, and that is start a conversation, not a fire. Be respectful with a disagreement. That's all I ask.
And I'm not scared, so don't think you're going to scare me either.
That part.
She wants all the smoke.
Listen.
We can do this all day.
So do you think that VH1 and Basketball Wives should remove Evelyn as a cast member?
I think VH1 should have a conversation with Shawnee. Mm-hmm. I think Shawnee
She really does get to do the whole
Shawnee,
you know,
owes us an apology.
Hide your hand
Shawnee
as
failed
executive
us.
Producer.
I was a Shawnee apologist for years, mm-hmm. so I feel personally betrayed by Shawnee. When I saw Shawnee saying that she had spoken to Jesus or God or somebody and they told her to do things better, I believed her. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? When Evelyn was crying on Oprah and Ayanna and any other black woman who would hold her, mm-hmm. I believed her, right? So now we're 4 years of me believing you, and y'all played me and y'all completely showed your butt right. for about 17 episodes.
Right.
You owe us an apology, and instead of being defensive and saying you didn't do it on purpose, let's be honest. Impact does not have the same, like, impact and intention are two different things. You didn't intend to do it, but you still did it, right? Mm-hmm. If you accidentally hit somebody with your car, their legs are still broken. Mm-hmm. If you accidentally offend the actual audience that's paying your bills, whether you intended to or not, you have a bias that we pointed out, own it, and mm-hmm. apologize.
Yeah.
But as long as you right. keep pretending that it didn't happen, we're never going to trust you again.
Right.
Until Shawnee apologizes, I'm not trusting nothing else that she's producing. I'm sorry.
I don't. Well, I think you'll be waiting a really long time for.
I'm
that
not
apology.
Waiting for nothing because I have other options. But
what?
That's fine.
You know, we've mentioned a couple times, like, oh well, they went to church and talked to a pastor, or they went to Ayanla and
it
said they were going to be
her.
Different. Yeah, and some of us did believe her, but at the end of the day, you can say you changed all you want. You can talk change. You can have a TV show about change or whatever. But when you get put in an environment where other people are going to push your buttons, who you really are still is going to come out.
Mm-hmm. Ding, ding,
period.
Ding.
It's going to show who you are, and that's what we see.
Yeah.
You can say you change all you want, but that's what we see. Do I think they should take her off the show? Whether she's on the show or not, I don't really care. Part of the thing that I think we have to do as women mm-hmm. is to stop celebrating women who look expensive and act cheap.
Oh!
And that is what Evelyn does.
Shots fired.
That is every single reality show.
She called you Rainbow in a Dolce & Gabbana bag,
we
Evelyn.
Need to stop.
Ooh.
I think what we would call that is the server tip of the day. I mean, reality TV is it's a monster. I mean, I don't really talk a lot about my experience with reality show because it was so harrowing. It was so traumatic. It was really, really awful. And it was something that I asked for. Like, I manifested that. You know, it's a whole long story, but it was something that I wanted. I'd started my new career in real estate, and I was like, wouldn't it be great if I was like the black female Frederick Eklund from Million Dollar Listing?
I love Frederick.
This would be so amazing.
Him.
And everything was on par. Everything was happening the way that I planned it out in my head. What I didn't see coming was that bottle coming towards my head that Geneva decided to hit me with.
I know her. That's awkward.
Well, we'll have an off-camera
conversation.
We'll have an off-camera
conversation.
That.
Look, you know, it's all love here.
It would be, you know, it would be really interesting. I was actually, because I went silent after all that had happened, and I've remained silent pretty much up until now, I don't discuss it. I will go into depth in my book so that you all know what was really happening.
Plug.
No, I did not sign up for that. No one signs up to have their, you know, like attempted murder committed against them. No one signs up for that shit.
Wow.
But I was waiting for the whole light skin, dark skin thing to happen when that whole debacle was happening. And it, thank God it didn't, because
the audience is smarter. We saw what was really happening.
I wouldn't have been able to deal with it because I was going through physical therapy, seeing doctors. I was on crutches for a month. Like, it was messed up. And then I had to deal with the whole court system. And you want to... Okay, I'll say it.
Oh, okay. We're saying things. Okay.
When it came to charges not being pressed, because when the cops came and everybody saw what would happen, it was clear that this was a felony assault. It was clear. But when it came to it moving through the court system and getting in the case ending up in front of the prosecutor, guess why she was reluctant? Because black women notoriously on reality shows solve conflict with combat. And so she just did not really feel like this was a winnable case. I was like, so everybody's actions prior to this moment, prior to what has happened to me, is the effect of what's going to happen as to whether or not this person is going to suffer consequences
right.
for their actions. I was mind, I had, I, I, Yeah. Reality TV ain't for me, people.
No, we're amending that. I'm gonna speak a word into your life. We're amending that. So, like, there's an old saying: be careful arguing with a fool, mm-hmm. because from a distance you can't tell who is who.
That's right. Mm.
I don't think reality TV was the issue. I think it was the fools that were in your midst were the issue, right?
That part.
What I'm gonna speak into your life
they
is
did
that
hire
the next time you are on reality television, I'm gonna speak that for all of us because we're all very marketable. Mm-hmm. Smile for the camera, Chantel. That it's going to be done in a way where we're empowered and we have ownership, because reality TV is not going anywhere, right?
Right.
So you saying you're not doing reality TV would be like somebody in the 30s saying, I don't like that television box. I'm just going to boycott it. And now television's not going anywhere. It's the way of the world.
No, you're
so
very,
because reality TV is not going anywhere, that's not the issue. The issue was the circus around you. And this old saying, what, not my monkey, not my circus? I mean that in a non-racist way.
You want to know what's so crazy?
It's an old saying, not my circus, not my monkey.
Like, I was,
So do next time you do, you're going to do it better.
Yeah, well,
you're going to ask better questions.
Okay.
But and we'll be there as your backup.
Well, no. When you're hired as a cast member, you cannot say, oh, I don't want that person on the show. No, they want to find your exact opposite. They want to find who is going to antagonize you. So when they develop that show Bible, they ask you very pointed questions about what you like and what you don't like and what you hate and what you fear, and whatever those things are, they find the person that embodies all of that. So you're literally
But who is they, though? If more black women were put in positions of power, the they would be different.
Conflict
sells, which is why I said we need to stop celebrating and worshiping these type of women, because as long as we are doing it, then they're going to keep selling it to us.
That's exactly right. When I was doing music videos, I was just like, and then I started to speak on panels and everybody used to accuse me of racial genocide for participating in music videos. I was just like,
Big Pimpin' did all that.
I said, whoa. I was like, hold on a second. As a video model, I am the lowest rung on the totem pole. Lowest rung. There is so many people to be upset with, yourselves included, because you're the one that is purchasing the music. You're the one that is requesting it on the radio. It's getting spins. You cannot fault them for developing a formula that has seemed to work by way of rating systems and purchases and consumption. Just be very careful what it is that you disdain if you're not going to understand, like, you're actually a consumer of it. Oh, we hate to love it. Okay, well, then shut the fuck up when it's inconvenient.
That's the word. Yeah. She said shut the fuck up. It's called hate watching. I actually refuse to hate watch things.
Me too.
Oh, no, I don't.
Because a hate watch rating on Nielsen is still a Nielsen rating.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So the word of the day is discernment, guys. You are what you eat.
Yeah.
Literally.
In all different ways.
Figuratively and literally. Yes. On that note, I hope we unpacked this this topic as much as possible. Mind, body, and soul, that whole thing. We're here for the food. And tune into our next episode. God knows what it's going to be about, but it's going to be about something visceral.
No. Yes. We have visceral reactions here. And we're here for the food.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
If you like our show and the content we're featuring, please hit subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to us. iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, YouTube, and just like your Uber driver asks, leave us a 5-star rating. Also, please leave us a review about your favorite part of the show or your number one takeaway from the episode. We read all the reviews, and this will only help us curate the content that you want to see and hear. Thanks, guys.